Yippee! Yippee! Yippee!
Listen, what's the title of this thing? No title again?
Anda de lo lili ele du mare.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Background a little bit here. I'm going to ring the bell. Hey, welcome to a new Dixon Chains podcast. They're coming out fast and heavy. This must be 782, perhaps. Doesn't much matter. Scarborough Dude here, broadcasting to you today from the cemetery, St. Andrew's Cemetery, because I drove to Thompson Park and the gate was closed. There is, aha! These are the new regulations they're putting in across the city. Now, I don't know why, really, they closed a park that size. It's huge. People are spaced out, you know, for walkers, joggers, everything. And I guess they're trying to get the message, hey, stay home, but come on. I don't think that was a good call. People were not congregating in large groups. Anytime I've gone, you see just, you know, singles or somebody with a kid taking a walk. But apparently not everybody's getting the message, and they felt it necessary to close City Park. So the gate was closed, and I swung over to this place, St. Andrew's Cemetery, which is always my backup anyway. I posted a tweet. I said, here, the people are already dead, so nobody's worried about parking at a cemetery. Yeah. I'm just back from Shoppers Drug Mart. Today is my one. It's nice to have an errand, something you have to do, you know, get out there and do something. And this was pretty safe. I went to the wellness center, which is connected to Shoppers Drug Mart, to buy a proper wrist brace. And I got a dandy here. It's kind of weird. I phoned the provider, the benefits provider today from my wife's plan and asked, oh, yeah, that's covered. Yeah, 100%. But still, I went in today instead of buying it yesterday to save 20% and then saving tax because I have a prescription for it from a doctor. So it's costing my provider less money. It's not even coming out of my pocket. I could have been indifferent, but I don't feel that's right. I think if there's savings to be made, make them. And this is what bothers me. People have these benefits. And I remember hearing somebody bragging about getting orthopedic golf shoes because he had this gold-plated pension plan and benefits plan long after he retired from his teaching job at Centennial College. And a lot of people, somebody else, yeah, getting prescription sunglasses for all their kids because they can. And that's why a lot of people, you know, that quote, that's why we don't have nice things. That's why a lot of people don't get any benefits. Part-time teachers didn't, because the full-time had a lot. And I know there are people who argue, well, they earned it. No, some people just take advantage of benefits. It's a seam. I mean, this business of the government's going to just send money to people. Well, that's good. I'm not even worried about that. Good. I don't care if a few people abuse it here and there. You know, the only people who really will do that are people who low enough on the totem pole, they need the money anyway. So come on, give it to them. Okay, that's not where I wanted to go. I want to talk about something. It's a little awkward. I'm going to talk just a little bit about a fellow we all know, we refer to as the virtual youper. And I've always, he seems to like me, and that's very nice, and he seems to even respect me, which, wow, that's a bonus. But I've often wondered from the beginning, and I remember distinctly the first time meeting him in Ottawa at, I guess, the last PAB. And I'm sitting on a bench, and I took pictures. There's Bob and Mark. And he comes up, and he had been following us all this time. And finally, things got in the way, and he wasn't able to make any of them. And finally, he made this one and kind of introduced himself. And I'm like, well, that's like, he had a connection long before we had a connection. We didn't know that much about him, but he knew about us and wanted to be part of this group. And I guess that was my first bit of puzzlement. Why would he want to join us? And then I look around and think, well, hell, there's a lot of nice, intelligent, clever, creative people. Why wouldn't he? And maybe it's something that he felt he found in this really Canadian contingent that wasn't anywhere close to where he is in Copper Harbor. So anyway, if you don't know who I'm talking about, it's Michael. I always call him Michael Musley. I don't think that's quite right, but close enough. Musiel or something. Just know him as the virtual youper because that's what he is. He lives in Copper Harbor, Michigan, which apparently is further north than Toronto. He needs to remind us of that, me especially. And episode 373 of the podcast that shall not be named, and you just find that by the initials only, gives sort of a reintroduction of who he is and why he's where he is. And I think that might be because he got a mention on Tom Merritt's show. And so probably he's going to have a few new listeners. So it was actually quite wonderful that he did this. He went back. Now, Michael is the kind of guy, Superman's not the right word, a very accomplished person, clearly very bright, very well versed, not just in technical things, and that I'm including the internet and that and programming, but also in practical mechanical things like machinery and things that, you know, you just listen to the show and you'll know he's sort of keeping a town running on their phones and internet connections. So really, it's quite amazing, and it's the kind of person you could not only be in awe of, but maybe feel a little bit, if you compared yourself, you'd feel a little bit bad. I can't do any of that shit. Holy Christ. Now, I've got an older brother who he's not tech savvy in that at all, because he's of an older generation, 5 years older than me, but is a practical guy, a guy who could fix a car, fix an engine, fix a motor, do all the other stuff that Virtual Youper can do. Virtual Youper just adds another layer. He's crossed the bridge, that digital divide, and is into the digital world as well. So I was always, as a kid, felt kind of useless, and I struggled. And this, I'm going on about this because this gets back to almost the beginning of the Dixon Janes podcast. One of the things that I wanted to do was sort of say, hey, it's okay to be you and not be perfect. We struggle with our identities. We struggle with who we are and maybe who we aren't. And for the longest time, and actually until I was about 27, I struggled because I was not a man. And a man was the kind of person who could maybe do the things a virtual youper could do and, you know, have no trouble. You know, back in those days, it was just hooking up your stereo speakers properly. And I would struggle with things like that. I am completely useless when it comes to anything, fixing anything. I just don't. I don't measure up. And I used to hold that as the standard. This is what a man does. And even my father was a radio guy, a ham radio operator, and was very accomplished in the things of his day. And I had none of those skills. I've got no music skills, you know. I just lack all those things. So I think I struggled more with just coming to terms with shortcomings. And after going through group therapy and recognizing, hey, nobody's perfect. Everybody has these self-doubts, and I imagine even Michael does, you know, where there has to be areas where he feels he's a failure, hasn't measured up or whatever. I really wanted the Dixon Janes podcast to be a show that made people feel comfortable with their own shortcomings, that, hey, I'm a human. I've learned a few lessons. I'm a little bit older than most of my listeners. And it's okay to be you. It's okay not to measure up. It's okay not to be perfect. It's okay to not be able to do this, 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 and this. Never mind the that. And that's, you know, hey, that's one of the things. So very early on in the Dixon Janes podcast, I talk about male impotence, you know, that I experienced. I thought, well, maybe that will put people at ease and realize, hey, these things happen. This is just part of the human frailty. This is just, hey, nothing to be ashamed of here, boys. And so why am I going on? How does this tie in? Well, maybe because I'm just examining that, God, you listen to Michael and you think, God, you know, I can't do anything that man does, but I don't have to. There's probably some things that I can do or are capable of, and some talents, some abilities, some skills that aren't measurable in the same way and aren't so obvious that I have, that others don't. I couldn't tell you what they were right now, but I'm hoping they're there. No, our good friend, the author, the writer, the podcaster, the camera geek. It's amazing, this little thing of names that slip. John Meadows is the name, of course, but it'll just for an instant, you go to grab onto it, and it's like a bar of soap, it just slips away. Yeah, okay. Stop trying to think of it, and it'll come back. And, of course, it's John Meadows I'm talking about. Who said, but, yeah, but you've got maybe certain social insights and skills that a lot of other people lack. And I was, okay, yeah, that is true. I do tune in on a different frequency and pick up a lot of things that other people, it's obviously, they're quite oblivious to in social situations. So, yeah, that's sort of one area. But anyway, have we said enough about that? It's a salute to Michael saying, I respect you and admire you, and wow, the world needs a lot of you. I think, yeah, I've probably covered this topic before because I think I likened him to Daniel Boone, of a great American hero. You know, maybe Boone was, maybe he wasn't. Davy Crockett, you know, hey, come on, he killed him a bar when he was only three. But anyway, it's good to have Michael in our group. We are all different, and I hope that we provide whatever it is that Michael makes a point of coming up to find, showing up for Podcamp Toronto, showing up for the Marshall McLuhan Podcaster Roundtables, and joining us whenever he has a chance. So, yeah, we must be doing something right, too. Okay, we're going to park that. I don't even know if that was a topic, but that's something we talked about. So today my errand was to buy a splint. I've already told you that, didn't I? Yeah, I'm holding it in my hand now. I'm quite pleased. It's kind of funny because I was using one meant for your left hand. If I could take the splint out and shove it in this way, and I could make do with it. So in the end, I figured, okay, come on now. Your wife has paid a lot of money into this plan by having a lower salary. Surely you can have a new one. Besides, the old one was starting to smell a bit. There you go. All right, I guess I'll just stop there. Rather than pick up a new topic, I'll just end there, and I'm going to go home and get some lunch. And I think today is the day I really should start writing the letters to my regular host family saying, sorry, folks, but no students coming in. And gradually I'm thinking about the letter that I'm going to write to the school to let them know I don't think I want to do it in 2021. And the reason that's so difficult is that, it's a commitment. Once I say no, that's it. I've cut myself off of a very large piece, a sizable piece of income every year, income that I certainly could do with. And I think a lot of people might say, why would you do that? You know, surely there's another way around it. Couldn't you hire somebody and keep the program going but get somebody else to do the work? And that, I guess that's where I have to do the thinking part, and that's why I can't make a decision just yet, because it is a big decision. But part of me thinks, God, it's time. It's time, bit by bit. I'm just sort of, you know, it feels like I'm shipping myself off, you know, into I don't know, never land. All right, Scarborough Dude, signing out from the St. Andrew's Cemetery with a little more from Lovin' Rockets. Check. Okay, well, here we are in a new place. Well, I've been here before and I've recorded from here before, but not very often. It is Rest Haven Memorial Grounds, I believe. And I'm looking at the huge Catholic seminary, is that the right term, across the other side of Kingston Road. And this is just in the area of Bluffers Park, but Bluffers Park, like Thompson Park was yesterday, is all locked down, like everywhere. Loading areas, beach area, all parts are locked. The gates are closed, and, you know, you can park on the side of the road and walk, but that wasn't right for me. So instead, I knew this cemetery was here. I visit often. A good friend of my sons who died at 16 from one of those caffeinated drinks is buried here. So I visit from time to time. And I also think about, you know, my resting place if I wanted to have a spot. This is pretty nice. I mean, it's right by Bluffers Park. If I had to pick a spot rather than have ashes just scattered, this might not be a bad place, you know. And that just raises the question, do you need a place for people to come back to? Our friend Peter McRae, our accountant, weird accountant friend out in Vancouver, Bruce scattered his ashes near one of the beach areas in Vancouver. And it's a place Bruce will go from time to time just to visit and sit and maybe talk to Peter. And that's a nice idea, too. But this has, like, permanent markers. And I can see for people who just want to have a place to put their urn, they've got these big concrete blocks. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Maybe room for 24 of them and a brass plate marking who it is. I'm looking at Duncan Donald, for example. And you could have that. And I don't know, the idea of you have to share this great big thing with all the other, that's where my parents are. They're side by side in a wall somewhere outside of Ottawa that none of us, my brother, my sister, and I visit. And I think that's kind of shameful. But at the time, we thought that was the best choice for them. They are side by side, and that's what they wanted. Yeah, do people even visit? So, yeah, wow, there's a lot more. There's a fancy one with a trumpet above it, White, James White, beloved husband of Joan. So, yeah, anyway, that's, I didn't want to spend too much time, but I did actually just, I thought, hey, it's a sunny day, park the car, get outside, find, and they have conveniently a very nice little bench to sit on, and a decent view overall, a lot of trees. So as far as, you know, places to be parked after you're dead, this is not a bad one. And it's a huge area. And I'm long past, if anybody listened to Dixon Jane's podcast 10 or more years ago, I was adamant about the point, I do not want to die, or I don't want to be buried. My final resting place be Scarborough. Like I really was. Those are the days when I was, I don't know, struggling with things like that. And who is this, Ken or the Scarborough dude? And go on for weeks at a time about those things. But I'm long since past that. No, Scarborough is my home. And it is where my children have grown up. And it is a place where, I think if I was going to pick a spot to be permanently located or what's left of me, the ashes, this might be it. I already picked up brochures about, how to arrange the funeral. I haven't gone any further. So maybe that's a good opening for my next topic. It's not my time to leave yet. I think my family still needs me. My elder son in Vancouver is very worried that my son, who is still working at the airport, could bring it back home. And if I caught it, I'm sort of the perfect candidate for dying. Well, I don't think any more than anybody else, but it does worry my son. And what worries us was that he would blame his younger brother for having given it to me. And we don't want that at all. There's no blame. It's, you know, when God picks your number, it's your time to go. Don't believe that. But I do believe it's simply not my time to go. But this week, my wife is working from home, and she was given a computer, a Windows machine, which I hate, no mouse for it, and it's Windows, the operating system is 7, And I don't know my way around it at all. I could work Windows machines at work at my when I worked at Centennial a few years back now. And that was no problem at all. I could handle it. I knew what I had to do. But on this machine, it just seems so complicated. And it's so hard to find anything. And I guess I've just plain forgotten because I'm not using Windows. And it's frustrating. And when I'm trying to do something, I curse and swear. You know, that's just the way I do things. And really, my wife does not like that at all. And it bothers her and it makes her feel she's sorry. She asked me to do something. Like she wanted to spell check a letter. There were some spelling mistakes. And normally spell check automatically comes up. But in this case, because she was writing a response to an email, the spell checker didn't come into play. And I didn't know how to go and get it. So I said, I'll just do it for you and told her what to change. But meanwhile, she felt she had, you know, had to depend on me. And then what's worse was I made such a fuss about it. Well, geez, you should be able to do this or something. And it appears that I'm being very unkind to her, and it comes across that, and that's what I want to get to. And this ties into the last clip about when I was talking about how some people, you know, seem to be, better is not a good word, but maybe that's what we feel sometimes, better than us. We compare ourselves to others. And I know there are people who would be kind, considerate, patient, loving, gentle, and I appear to be none of those things around the home, and it's upsetting because it's wrong. You know, why do I have to be that way? And I just, you know, I make a fuss. Oh, damn it! God damn it! Now where's the back? How do you delete? Jesus Christ! It's sort of like that thing, and it just upsets her because it makes her feel, well, I'm upset. And I said, well, I'm not upset. That's just the way I express myself. It's gone. As soon as I say, oh, for fuck's sake, it's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's like a thought bubble. But she's heard it and it's lingering in her head. And she says, never mind, I'll do it. And then, of course, then it just escalates. And then it's, no, don't say never mind. I'm going to help you. No, I don't want your help. Well, you need my help. And oh my God, boys and girls, I don't know if any of you are as childish and immature as I am, but once my wife and I seem to get going on something, that it's very hard to unplug. And it's just the worst possible combination of temperaments, I guess. And it's it's sad, too, and then we both end up feeling bad, and then it takes a while to recover, and we always do, and we get back to normal, but until the next time when something comes up. And I think what was worse was I was sort of giving advice, like, look, why don't you just spend the morning just finding your way around the computer, knowing, getting out an Excel sheet, getting out the email, getting a Word document, and just playing with it. She has no interest in that whatsoever. And, you know, had learned what she had to learn. And at work, when she's using a desktop computer that she knows her way around, she doesn't have these problems. It's using this new machine. And here's me trying to school her and sort of say, rather than gently, patiently, kindly teach, I'm sort of saying, well, why don't you try doing this? And she likens it to say, well, you know, if you don't do something for a long time, you're not so good at it. And I know that very well. You know, if I spent a whole day on that machine, I might find my way around better and be a better teacher, but I don't feel like doing it because I just fucking hate Windows. But that's just been, you know, uncomfortable. And I want to come clean about that, that the part of me that wants to be this wise, gentle soul who's finally at the age of 71 achieved some wisdom and kindness and understands love. I don't demonstrate that at all. So there we go back to scolding ourselves for not being who we feel we should be. And now I'm going to go back to sort of high school. And again, this is tying in with all the words of praise I gave to the virtual Youper in the last clip about what it felt like to be the last kid picked on any team in gym. And that was, you know, this was Lord of the Flies era back in school. You know, you had two guys, the best guys who just, they can't do anything else in school, but man, when it comes to gym, they excel. They are the best. They are the tops. This is their time. And so it's good for them, you know, you want them to make the most of it. But still, so they get to be the leaders, you know, and then they go back and forth. You guys pick the teams. The gym teacher just stands there and watches. He knows it's happening. And he knows the same guys, the losers, like myself, are going to be the last picked anytime, every time. And it's a shitty feeling. You're standing there waiting, watching the teams form. A, B, this side, 1-1. And you're standing there down, the numbers dwindle. You're down to the last four, last three, last two. Are you going to be the last one? Or maybe you're going to be lucky and you're going to be second to last. Is somebody even stupider, weaker, less competent than you who might get picked? But that's unlikely. Or, worst of all right, you guys get the last two players. I don't care, you know. Like, they're going to do more harm to your team than any good they could possibly do. And that's a shitty fucking feeling. And that's kind of where I was at in gym. And, you know, fortunately, I had good friends after school. And we'd go, I've mentioned before, playing baseball, playing 21, doing stuff, and actually having fun playing with people who, you know, even though you were still the worst with your amongst your four friends who were just playing with a bat and ball, it was okay. They weren't judging you the same way. They were just happy to have you there. And there were still some laughs, and you did it, you know? But boy, going through high school gym is cruel. So the same thing applies for who are the brains, who are the kids who are really smart. And so what I'm getting at is this issue of always comparing against somebody else. There's always somebody better, smarter, better looking, more masculine, whatever it is, whatever criteria is important at that time in your life. There's somebody better than you. And it's sad to think that this is being repeated daily a million times on Facebook, that somebody's holiday pictures or their picture with their boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever it is. And I'm guilty. I'll put a picture up and I'm feeling so goddamn proud. Look at my wife, how beautiful she is. Look at that. I was in Russia, you know, and you show off and you're boosting your own ego by posting those pictures. It's a cruel thing to do, but you do it and you take some pride in it. And so there's a balancing act in there. And so after reflecting on things that I can't do or are incompetent at or just whatever, then you'll sort of circle the wagons and come back and say, okay, now what can I do that somebody else can't do? What makes me better than some other loser, you know? And it's just such a silly game. But we're all, I believe, almost all of us are trapped in that game. So I'll go through and I'll think, oh yeah, well, and I've done them all before here. My Prince George, my working on the track gang, my one-way ticket to Japan, my 2 years in a bush village in Nigeria. You've heard all the stories before, but those are the things that I needed to make up for all the deficiencies, for all the failures, for all the things that weren't as good as somebody else's. And I hope when I do that, it doesn't have any effect on somebody else. Say, oh my God, look what he did. I can't do that. I couldn't have done that. And the fact is, no, a lot of you couldn't. I had to because I was trying, I needed to prove a point. I needed to prove. It was that trip to Europe in when I was 20, 21. Quitting university after the second year and taking the year off and going. I just had to finally prove, hey, I can do something. I can get out of my home. I was still living at home at that time. And do it. And it was the best thing for me. I'm going to jump, but maybe there's a connection. I just had a little text message yesterday from my good friend Kenneth in Atlanta. I assume he's still in Atlanta. And Kenneth was my youngest listener. Well, I don't know if he still is. Maybe. Probably. But I was thrilled when he was still, I think, a college student that he discovered the Dixon Chains podcast through a Japan connection and followed me. And I met him on my trip back from Florida and stayed at his house one night. And I'm just thrilled. Well, I think I may have mentioned many, many podcasts ago, I guess, quit work and did the hike the Appalachian Trail. I don't think I pronounced that correctly, sorry, which is a feat. And it was kind of a game changer. I guess that some people do that trip through Spain, the walking, and it changes things. And so I just had a message from him that he's not only with a new partner, but he's downsizing and changing houses and may yet be off on another new journey. So I guess the point of that was, hey, I've got an interesting friend here. It makes me feel that the Dixon James podcast is worth doing when you have listeners like that, interesting people out there who are still connecting with you. Kenneth is the probably the only person who's listened to every single episode of this podcast, and some more than once. And so I salute you, Kenneth. I know you'll be listening to this one. I salute you wholeheartedly. You've always made me feel good. I my heart swells with pride that I have you as a listener, and you seem to genuinely care and get a kick out of this old guy, Ken. So, all right, we'll park that. Let's stay tuned, and we'll find out where he's going to be and what's next in his life adventure. But basically what we concluded was some of us have to chart our own course in life. I think that was the point. That we need sheep. We need people to accept the status quo. These are the words I texted him. We need people. We're all better off that people just get on with life and do what's expected of them and follow sports and follow TV shows and follow trends and do the right thing and get married, have children, do whatever, you know. Just do it. And that's good, and hope you enjoy it. And thankfully, most of mankind is that way. But for some of us who are a little quirky, maybe have some deficiencies, who knows why, we need to sort of make our own path. And I'm pleased that I've done that. So, going to throw in one more piece here. Yeah, I've almost gone on, and I promise not to. But yesterday, I finally got around to, number one, I bought this brace that I'm wearing now, and I'm so glad I got it, and I've already been reimbursed it for my right hand for the carpal tunnel, and it works. It's wonderful. Great. The thing of yesterday, yes, so the other task I did was write some letters to my host families, and I very carefully composed. I've talked before on this podcast about the power of words and how important it is to get them right. And I'm continually still double-checking. Is that the right word? Yeah. It's exactly what I want to use. And if anybody follows me, ever gets a message or an email or a text from me, or I post something, very often you'll find I'm using English that's not used commonly anymore. Vocabulary, expressions, phrases. Sorry, I'm drinking my McDonald's coffee, too. That just are old. They're out of date, and younger people wouldn't be seeing things the way I'm seeing them. And I kind of take a delight in that. So anyway, I got to composing this letter and was very carefully thanking the people who genuinely opened up their hearts and homes to my girls coming from Japan, and thanked them and told them there won't be one this year, and maybe there will be in 2021, but I don't know if I'll still be involved or something along that line. And I got back four or five messages that were so beautiful, and I think I'm going to share them with you. And this is like posting the pictures on Facebook of your holiday so others are envious. Nobody will be envious of these things that I'm going to read later, maybe. Unless I change my mind, which I do often on the Dixon James podcast. But they made me feel so good. They really made me feel I'm doing something right. And they really made it, reminded me of what a difficult decision this is going to be if I ever do give up this program that I've been doing since 1993. It seems the perfect time to stop. It's the third time we've had like sort of a worldwide plague that brought an end to it. And three just seems a perfect number. Okay, it's like a curse. It's like, okay, you've had three, stop. Now, that may be another sign. Okay, you've had three, you won't have any more. Keep going forward. The other parts, oh my God, you're 70, you're going to be 72 this year. You're going to be 73 next year. Do you really want to be leading, you know, 32 girls around Quebec City? Yes, I do. So I have to think a lot about that. But these letters that I got back from the host families really weighed the scale on the side of, hey, keep doing it. And each of these families, I'll keep doing it. I'm there for you. So maybe I'll revisit that later. That's part of my reality, but it's a part that left me with such a wonderful, warm, good feeling in my heart that, hey, I have done something worthwhile in my life. Maybe up to 1,000 students have come to Canada through my efforts and had a life-changing experience for the good. And the families involved have absolutely loved it. Like with the first family, they phoned me actually and said, gee, they've got visitors coming. One of the students that they hosted with her husband this time, and they're going to go out to a Blue Jays game together. And they've kept in touch. It's gone beyond the program. And this is a family who never had children of their own. So they've taken these in. And wow, does that ever make you feel good? So of all this drifting and all the years of uncertainty and all the time I wasted getting drunk and getting high and the stuff I've done, beyond all that, I've actually done some worthwhile, productive things. So I'm saluting myself. Forgive me. I feel very uncomfortable and embarrassed now, but damn it. Yeah. Okay. I did something that I'm pleased with. I get my message today. It was somebody else's birthday. I sent him a message, told him, gave him a list of, off the top of my head, of 10 things he should think about doing, but ending with love yourself, saying it's the hardest thing to do and it's the one thing I struggle with. And although it may sound to some of you that I love myself far too much, that's not at all fucking true. You don't really fucking listen well enough if you think that, but I'm really trying hard to keep things in perspective and give myself credit. And there, I just did it. All right, shut it the fuck up, man. All right, Scarborough Dude signing off from it's not St. Andrews, whatever, this Rest Haven Cemetery. Bye for now.
Rainbird dies through the hole in a broken guitar. Rainbird sings a song so sad in blue. Like a stranded insect stuck in a bowl of glue. Tries to fly, but he will die if he ever leaves the zoo. Rainbird, rainbird, rainbird swoop through the chimney pots and rain. Of a famous stage, he tries to become invisible by stealing the front page. Rainbird. For a pittance in a boot and shoe yard, that's when you wanted what you now give away.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Chicken says it's time to go. And it is. This is the last clip for this particular podcast, number 782 of the Dixon Jane Show. Not much of a show, really. But anyway, I like it when I get on and I have nothing planned to say. And I just start talking and I see where it takes me. And I like that kind of freedom. And there's a bit of an edge to it because you don't quite know. And I normally end up seeing things that surprise me a little. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know I felt that way. But today's a little different. I've got a few things I do want to express, and it's kind of in keeping with what I've already been talking about on this episode. So it's almost as if there is a theme to this one, and see if you can understand what it is. So first of all, it is Saturday. It is bloody cold. I'm sitting in the road track with the engine running. I didn't put the heater on. I probably should, but I'm not going to stay here for long. I wanted to read something, a letter I got from a friend. Now, I say letter because it's composed like a letter. Words are carefully chosen. There are paragraphs, proper punctuation, spelling, vocabulary, and it's well thought out. It just happened to come in the form of an email, which was just the way of delivery, but in fact, I call it a letter. And I'm going to read that one paragraph. I'm not going to identify the person. He knows, I know. And no particular reason not to, although some of you might want to guess for fun at home. But it touched me today, and I wrote back. So, and it's to do with this podcast, or this paragraph is anyway. Over the past year or so especially, it seems you've been able to finally start shedding some of the guilt and shame you associate with talking about your health, or maybe just being truly vulnerable in general. I love that line. I don't know what your inner critic is telling you, but from my perspective, you definitely are not one of those people constantly complaining about their ailments and making it all about them. To my ears, you provide excellent contemplation of aging, personal growth, health care, society, death, gratitude, fear, acceptance, and how all of it is intertwined. Now, isn't that beautiful? And when I get something like that, and like that, you know, a text from Kenneth down in Atlanta, and feedback, you know, of any kind, but especially feedback like that. Wow, this guy actually listens. It's just so reassuring, reaffirming, and makes you want to go on and realize, well, maybe I am doing something right with the Dixon Jane's podcast, because for whatever reason, and I think it's my lifelong insecurity and maybe some anxiety in there, but just a sense of whatever I've done has never been good enough. And I'm okay with accepting that as a reality, but it is nice to get a kind of feedback that says this particular thing you're doing, this Dixon Jane's podcast, it's good. I like it. And that's just made me feel wonderful. So I hope you can appreciate that. I hope some of you say, hey, yeah, you're right. It's true. I do like your honesty and your vulnerability. I guess that's the thing. And that is, as I probably explained earlier before getting this email, that's one of the things I'm trying to do on this show. Say, hey, you know, let me be an example of all the shortcomings, all the stupid things you do in your life and want to, you know, somehow, as we march on, as time marches on, you want to feel better about yourself. You want to start to let go of some of the self-abuse and punishment. Okay. Anyway, gee, the engine just slowed down a lot. I guess that's good. It's probably cold. It's cool. It's warmed up. I guess that's the thing. All right, so now, the next thing I want to get on, I've talked a lot about how this summer, of course, there's no study tour, and that leaves a huge gap between organizing for the next one in 2021, and a lot of me is thinking this is the time to pull the plug. This is the time to let go of the money, but let go of all the responsibility and the headaches and the stress that comes with trying to find host families who are perfect for my girls. And it's not a question of, you know, it's nothing to book a hotel room, but to find a place where you can put a 16-year-old girl into their home for 10 nights, and so that girl was going to be moved to tears by the time she says goodbye, from starting off with a complete stranger who might reach out and hug the girl, and the little girl is timid and frightened, and they don't get hugs in Japan, and what's this? This is just too weird. I don't know if I'm going to last this, and I don't even know if I speak English. And by the end of the 10 days, this magic has happened, and they're just, it's tearful goodbyes and hugs and wow, thank you so much. That's the essence of what we've been able to achieve over all these years since starting this Canadian study tour project that I've taken on. So anyway, so that means when it comes to the decision to do I bring an end to it or not, it's not an easy decision to make. And so I sent out all these letters. I told you, carefully composed letters to the host families. And I started getting some responses. And I want to just share a couple of them with you. Thank you, Ken, for allowing us into your family, quotation marks, and for taking such good care of all the young women as well as the volunteer families. We've all been lucky to have had the opportunity to host and to get to see you in action. The world is a better place with people such as yourself. Now, how do you think that makes me feel? If you guessed pretty damn good, you were right. Good for you. Okay, we're going to try another one. See if you can guess how this one makes me feel. This would be, I believe, yes, a separate letter. We've enjoyed it so much, and we'll miss it, and you, exclamation mark, if it is closed down after this. Thank you many times over for your devotion and Herculean efforts on behalf of all the homestay parents and the 700-plus girls for whom you have created a wonderful, memorable, and life-changing experience. That was another family. And there were more, like everybody who wrote back had something along those lines, and one was even just a phone call telling me what it meant, telling me about the girls. You know, and a lot of these families continue to send emails, birthday cards, Christmas cards, gift exchanges sometimes. Some of the girls actually come and visit the family. Something really beautiful has come out of all of this, and I do consider it my life's work. So I'm going to share one more thing, and it kind of ties together. I have a friend, and I've mentioned that friend not by his real name, but by another name, which I'm not going to mention now because I feel too bad about this. This friend wrote to me and said, "Oh, that's too bad. A lot of your families are going to be really missing the money you pay them this summer." That was his take on it. Now, the truth is, there are some people who take in students as another source of income. It's like they're renting out a room, and there's lots who do it for college. And boy, if you know, I would consider doing it if we had the space here to take in a boarder, somebody studying at Centennial College. This would be a perfect place. So a lot of people do it for money. It's a job. Those are not the people I recruit. Those are not the people I want. This is not for you to make money. This is, are you open to looking after a very scared 16-year-old girl who really needs some kindness and support? And I have been lucky, and this has been the struggle, to have found well over 200 of those families, maybe 250 of those families over the years. Now, starting when I had other partners in the East York Board of Education, I didn't find all the families. That was gradually fell to be my responsibility in the beginning. It was through the school board and so on. But now, for the past several years, it's been my job to find these families. So what I wanted was for this person to understand, no. These are not families who are doing it for money. These are families who are sending letters like that back to me. This is very, very different. So I explained that and said, all my families are well off, the ones I have. They have nice homes, most of them, cars, some of them summer cottages where they take the girls for a weekend. A lot of the ones who get the money donate it to their church or a charity. It's just, this is not, you know, this is just a, it's a thank you. And I always call it a, it's cost recovery. I just don't want you to be out of pocket. You're not being paid to host these girls, but I am paying you for the gas and for the, meals and so on, in your time. But it's not, you know, and it's a decent enough sum of money, but it's never been about the money. So this friend wrote to me and said, oh, that's too bad. They'll be sorry that they're not, you know, they're going to be, they're losing money too. And I wrote back explaining, no, that's not the way my program works at all. And then I copied and pasted one of those letters that a woman had said. I wrote back to this same person and said, I want you to understand, this is my life's work. This is not, this is, you know, you don't get it. And we've had this discussion over and over and over again. It's something else. This is what I've lived for. And I got an answer back immediately. And it said, well, you could have told me that in one sentence. Like, why did you even bother, you know, sharing that letter? I don't need to know that. You could have told me in one sentence. I would have got it. In other words, he didn't care that this fucking thing means a whole lot to me. What kind of fucking friend does that? I'm explaining it. That's why I've read it and shared it with you. God, this is real. This is emotion. This is kindness and love and caring and sharing and all of that shit I talk about, but it's in real life. It fucking happens. Every year I bring 32 girls from Japan to put with these host families. Something magical happens. It happens at the camp. When we're with these wonderful Canadian counselors, getting the girls singing and dancing and doing wacky things and out canoeing. It's an amazing program to have a friend that indifferent. But this is the same friend who has refused to ever listen to a single one of these podcasts. And when I said, well, you might be interested, I also put out a few short videos of objects that I know this person is very familiar with. This person might have been involved with the gathering of some of those crazy ashtrays and things. Nope, not interested. So I can only conclude this person's a little bit, I hate to say the word because they would deny it, but jealous about it and perhaps just not happy with their own life. And I know that. I know that for a fact. So now I feel shitty that why did I come down on it? Did it make any difference me not giving the name? What was that all about? So suddenly now I'm the weasel. I'm the small guy who's bragging and almost celebrating the fact that I have a friend who doesn't really care about my feelings. All right. God, now I'm really feeling uncomfortable. So I'm going to bring this in. Fuck! I went and ruined the whole thing. I should have stopped when I was ahead. Isn't it wonderful? Look at me. People like me and like what I'm doing. And instead I got into these petty arguments. But at the same time, it's like, you know, the big story out of this coronavirus is, oh, an 18-year-old at a Hamilton working at a McDonald's forged a note from a doctor saying she had the coronavirus and had to be off work because she didn't feel like working. So this is, you know, man, this is big news. And it's so easy. The first reaction, you fucking disrespectful, you know, 18-year-old, you miserable person, how low can you get? But I have to feel sorry for that person. Like, what kind of a person doesn't have the awareness, the understanding that, hey, you're going to get caught with a fake doctor's note. This isn't high school, although they're not far out from it. That was a really stupid thing. They had to close the McDonald's, you know, bring in the sanitizers, shut down the business. Now the person's being caught, and they're charged with public mischief. So it's like when somebody on Veterans Day robs the little boxes where you put your money into, you know, and everybody comes down on them. But you have to feel that, hey, that's a strung-out drug addict whose life is just a piece of shit. Don't blame them. There's a whole, you help them. And I sort of feel the same for this 18-year-old. While I know everybody would love to be out and trash them, as I've just trashed my friend, And I'm still embarrassed and ashamed about that. Sorry. This person, God damn, what kind of a life do they have? Like, what hope is there for that person? Are they ever going to become a moral, upright, good person? Will this be a learning experience that'll turn their life around and they'll actually spend the rest of your life trying to make up for it and do good things for people? Or is just this part of a sorry saga of, somebody whose life is just going to be miserable till the end? I'll leave that with you. God. Well, anyway, that's the way it goes when you do the Dixon James podcast. You never quite know how they're going to end. This one is going to end with a chicken.